Good afternoon, and thank you all for joining us today, joining Dr. Tedros for his briefing on Ebola, on the outbreak in eastern DRC after having just returned from there on Sunday. As this is a briefing about Ebola, we will begin with a statement by Dr. Tedros, and questions from journalists will be taken on Ebola first, and if there is any leftover time, then we can move to other subjects. We are also broadcasting this live on Twitter, Periscope, and we'll take one or two questions from Twitter after we've taken your questions here in the Palais. So without further ado, I hand over to Dr. Tedros. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Greg. And thank you also to all journalists who have joined today. And thank you for your interest. As you know, on July 24th, we declared that the Ebola outbreak in Western DRC was over. But just a week later, we were notified of another Ebola outbreak, this time in the eastern part of DRC, and which is, as you know, the northern Kivu. And because we knew, the northern Kivu area, it has its own factors that may actually be a create conducive environment for the transmission of Ebola. We decided to go immediately and to see the situation on the ground. And that's why we traveled, myself, our regional director of the Afro region and the Deputy Director General of Emergencies together. And we have tried to see the situation firsthand. And the areas we have visited were the epicenters of the current outbreak, Beni and Mangina. Of course, before I went there, as I said earlier, I was really worried because of the different nature of the Ebola outbreak in eastern DRC. But after the visit, I am actually more worried because of what we have observed there firsthand. As you know, this is a very dangerous outbreak. You know the experiences we have in 2014 and 2015. What makes actually the outbreak in eastern DRC or northern Kivu more dangerous is there is a security challenge. There is active conflict in that area. Since January, there were 120 violent incidences. Not only that, the night we stayed in Beni, there was a fighting actually within 15 kilometers, and four civilians were killed, and a number of them were kidnapped. So that environment is really conducive for Ebola actually to transmit freely, because in that area there are places called red zones, inaccessible areas, because there are many armed groups that operate in that region or in that province, and some of the areas are inaccessible. And that's why they call them red zones. And these red zones could be hiding places for Ebola. And that's why it makes it very, very difficult. We will have difficulty accessing those areas, and people from these areas will also have difficulty moving from the areas they're in to a place where they can get the support they need. And not only that, there are other factors that complicate the issue. One is high population density. Unlike the western part, the Equatoria province, where we had Ebola outbreak, and there is high population movement, both internal and across the border. And more than 1 million IDPs, These are additional factors that may be, or that are conducive actually to the transmission of Ebola. And with the number of cases, as of yesterday, we have so far 57 cases, 30 confirmed, and 27 probable, including 41 deaths so far. And this outbreak actually has now surpassed the previous Ebola outbreak in Equator province, which was put under control with 53 total cases and only 29 deaths compared to 41 now. And the other worrisome problem, especially in Mangina, is the number of health workers that are already infected with Ebola. And we have so far 7 cases. And as you know, the Mangina health facility is a small facility with not more than 75 health workers. So the government had already made a decision. There will be a contact, so they made a decision. Because of the contacts the other health workers may have, because of the 7 already confirmed cases, all health workers were, 64 of them, advised to stay at home, so to avoid any contacts, and replacement health workers were already provided to run the health facility. So these are the reasons I said from the start why I actually was worried after the visit than before the visit. Not only we know that it's an active conflict area, but we had already witnessed it while we were there. So that makes it more difficult to manage, because when there is less access, and when movement is prohibited, and when there are red zones that Ebola could hide, then makes it more difficult to fight this dangerous disease or virus. And what are we doing now? One thing I would like to start by saying is the leadership of the government is still strong. And the Minister of Health has been to the place 3 times already now. And we have already started case identification and contact tracing, and more than 600 has been identified. And we have started vaccination, starting from health workers, and we have already vaccinated people from the cities. We're preparing for treatments, and all molecules, 5 molecules, have got clearance from the ethical committee. And we have started community engagements, be it using radio, community leaders, and also faith or religious leaders. And we, of course, have to be more aggressive, and we're increasing the number of health professionals we have on the ground, and we're doing everything we can in order to be more aggressive than the virus. And on this, WHO is not alone. As I said earlier, the government's commitment is strong, and all partners are being involved, starting from MONUSCO, who's giving us huge support, UNICEF, WFP, MSF, ALIMA, and long list of partners, actually. And the last round of Ebola was defeated because of really genuine and strong partnership. And I was really glad during my visit to witness the same level of partnership and commitment. And then just would like to outline some of the challenges briefly. I may repeat some of them. So the challenges we're facing now are, some of them could be new, there are more infections in women and children than in men, which is very different from previous experience. And we have infections in health workers that complicates the 7 confirmed, and that's why the 74 were sent home. And the active conflict is the other challenge, and the red zones which are inaccessible. And of course, in addition to that, the high population density, the high population movement, not only internally but across borders into neighboring countries, are the serious challenges and our asks. First of all, what we are asking the international community is to help in ensuring access to the inaccessible areas. And also we call on the warring parties for cessation of hostilities, because the virus is dangerous to all. It doesn't choose between this group or that group. And the second ask is funding from partners. The last round, we got a swift response, and as a result, we were able to respond quickly, and we call upon international community also to speed up the financing. But I would like to thank the Gates Foundation, the U.S. government, China, the European Union, Japan, and UK for pledging to support, and we expect additional support. So this is what I would like to maybe say at the start, and any questions you have, I would be happy to respond. Thank you.
Dr. Tedros, thank you very much. We saw Catherine's hand first, so we'll take Catherine, and then we'll go to Marta, and then down the table. Thank you. Go ahead.
Yes, Catherine Fiancon Bokonga for Chinese TV, CGTN. Sir, you said that you're very worried and you gave us the challenges. I would like to know what are the links or the connections that you have with nearby Uganda, because the Ugandese border is not far. And as you said, also about the red zones, we know that there are many warlords in the region. And do you intend to maybe negotiate with these people to have access to these red zones? And the last question is about the funding. Could you be precise about the funding requests that you have for this campaign to fight this Ebola outbreak? Thank you.
Okay, thank you. As part of the visit, by the way, I have been to Uganda too, and a few hours there, and had a chance to meet with His Excellency the Prime Minister, the Foreign Minister, and the Health Minister, and others. And we agreed, as you rightly said, that Uganda is very close to the border where Ebola outbreak is actually raging, and we checked their preparedness, which is really good, and they are prepared very well for any eventualities, but we have agreed to that we need to strengthen it further, and they promised to us that they will be more vigilant. And on not only Uganda, we are also in contact with Rwanda, Burundi, and South Sudan that share borders on the eastern part of DRC. On the funding, of course, the amount of funding we need may change. That's why we have a very provisional draft. But as I indicated earlier, because of the serious challenges we have in the region, we want to make sure that we make at least close to a reasonable amount for the response, and we will announce that as soon as possible.
Thank you. Over to Marta, then the end of the table, and then Nina.
Yes, hello. Marta Hurtado, Spanish News Agency. A few questions too. On the borders, can you be more specific which measures have been established and implemented on the borders? Are they measuring temperature, are controlling other people that might be suspect of carrying the virus? Second of all, regarding vaccination, how many people have you vaccinated already? How many health workers and how many vaccines do you have? At the beginning, you had like 3,000 left over from the last outbreak, but the company said they would provide you with more. So how many and time frame? And then the two outbreaks are not connected. It's been established. Do you have any idea what caused this last outbreak? What is the number zero patient? It was again eating a bat or another animal. Can you elaborate on that? Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
Okay, thank you. On the borders and the neighboring countries, we have advised them to take the comprehensive approach to address any case actually transferring to the neighboring countries, and they're doing that. And from my visit to Uganda, that's what we have witnessed, and including, at the border area, having posts to check for cases. And in number of people who are vaccinated so far, we started with health workers, and we have already vaccinated more than 216. And according to the data I have since last evening, we have already vaccinated 20 people from the community. And we will speed up that. We need vaccinators, and we have already moved some from Guinea, and they have already arrived yesterday in Kinshasa, and we hope they will be on the ground today in Beni and Mangina, and we hope they will start their work any time. And we want to really speed up, especially the vaccination, and reach as many people as possible. On the outbreaks, as you have rightly said, the two are independent of each other, but still we haven't established what the cause is. We will do the after-action review and other assessments and try to establish what the root causes are. Thank you.
I'm sorry, regarding the number of vaccines, you had 3,000 left over for the last outbreak, but how many do you think you're going to be able to have? Number of vaccines you're going to be able to...
Number of vaccines, we have 3,000 on the ground ready to be used. But at a short notice, we can move up to 300,000. So in terms of vaccines, I think we're okay, we're comfortable.
Okay, sorry, to the back of the room, could you give your name, please?
Sure. I'm Anne from the Japanese newspaper, the Asahi Shimbun. And I would like to know if we should get prepared in the next coming days to have an announcement by WHO that this current Ebola outbreak is considered as a public health emergency of international concern. Thank you.
Sorry, can you...
Shall I repeat the question?
Okay. It's okay. So the current level is, it's high at country level and high regional and low global. And I haven't still thought about inviting the committee to declare fake or not, because we want to really observe how the situation unfolds. And that's why I said not only are we following DRC, but we are following with the neighboring countries too. And based on the situation and some additional information that we will get, we will decide.
Okay, in order, we have Nina, the gentleman here, then Stephanie, then Lisa. So over to Nina, please.
Yes, hi, Nina Larson, AFP. Hi. First, just a clarification on the number of health workers who've been vaccinated. You said 216 or 260?
216.
Okay, thank you. And then I had a question about You say you're not quite ready to consider whether this is a public health emergency of international concern, but how great do you think the risk of international spread is? If you could say something about that. And then also, you mentioned that women and children especially are being infected. Is there a reason for that? Could you explain why that is? And on the medication that's being given now, this prototype drug that's being deployed, could you explain how much is available, how many doses, or how much is being given? Thank you.
Okay. The risks of international spread is now at low level, and that's why I haven't invited the committee. But we're following the changes around the clock, actually, 24/7. So if there is a need, we can invite the committee and ask or seek their advice. Women and children, it could be related to care. One thing we thought, well, of course, a proper study has to be done, is it could be because women are, taking the responsibility of care, and because of that, they have a chance of getting the infection, especially in that part of the DRC. And children are dependent on women, as you know. And that may also be the reason behind more children being affected because of their links with their mothers. So it's the care and then the dependency of the kids, but we have to explore that further. There could be other traditional or cultural factors that may cause this. On medication, I don't remember the amount we have, but we can provide enough. And that's what I would like to assure you for all the five molecules that have already been cleared by the National Ethical Committee. Thank you.
On the molecules or this prototype, what kind of reaction are you getting from people on the ground? I mean, are they willing to take this medicine?
Yeah, from what we know, there is actually readiness for communities to really use medication, and proper counseling is done. And that also helps. Through proper counseling, we expect that people will be comfortable to use the available medicines that we have. Thank you.
Oui, Freddy Moulongo pour Réveil FM International. Docteur, je voulais trois petites questions. La première, vous avez mis l'accent sur l'insécurité. Voilà.
Which channel is this?
Go back to one, I think.
Is it one?
I think so.
Voilà. Freddy Moulongo pour Réveil FM International. Trois petites questions qui sont aussi des préoccupations. Dans votre speech, vous avez parlé de l'insécurité. Ouais. Dans votre mot d'introduction, vous avez parlé de l'insécurité. Pouvons-nous savoir, est-ce que l'insécurité... Ah, vous n'entendez pas.
Try another test, please. Can someone say something into a microphone?
1, 2, 1, 2.
Sorry? No, I know. I thought it was just
no
level.
Interpreter.
Yeah. No.
So anyone who volunteered to translate?
I can translate.
You can?
Okay. Okay.
Okay.
So please speak up and then he will tell me afterwards.
D'accord. Docteur, donc je disais donc vous, dans votre mot d'introduction, vous avez parlé de l'insécurité. Pouvons-nous savoir par rapport à cette insécurité, est-ce qu'elle est due aux groupes armés qui sont peut-être encore présentes dans les coins, ou c'est simplement une insécurité par rapport aux infrastructures, c'est-à-dire manque de routes, manque de ponts, etc., etc. La seconde question, c'est par rapport au fait que d'ici le mois de décembre, la République démocratique du Congo aura des élections, notamment des élections présidentielles. Est-ce que l'épidémie d'Ebola ne risque pas d'être, je dirais, une tache noire qui va empêcher peut-être une partie de la population congolaise d'aller au vote comme il se doit? Et la dernière question, c'est que les Congolais parlent de plus en plus d'un vaccin qu'auraient mis en place les docteurs Muyembe. Je ne sais pas si l'OMS est au courant de ça. Si oui, où est-ce que vous en êtes avec ça? Merci. Okay.
First question. Is the insecurity caused by armed groups or because of a lack of infrastructure?
What?
Is the insecurity caused by armed groups or by a lack of infrastructure? So basically, what is the cause of the insecurity? Mm-hmm. Second question. Will the Ebola outbreak stop Congolese from being able to vote in the elections?
Sorry?
Will the Ebola outbreak stop Congolese from voting in the elections in December? Third question, he wants to know, you called it a vaccine, but he means Dr. Mwembe's medicine, the MAP 114, he wants to know if it's being used.
So what did he say?
He just wants to know if the medicine that Dr. Mwembe is being used. Okay. That's it, those are the three.
Okay. Thank you. These are tough questions. First of all, I will complain that we should have translation. Services. The first one, the problem with security is because there are more than 100 armed groups operating in that region, in that province, and there are frequent engagements, fighting, kidnappings, and so on. And that is the reason behind this having red zones which are inaccessible, actually. So it's because of the active conflict which is raging in the region, and that's why, as you know, MONUSCO has been there for many years now and trying to help in peacekeeping. So that's the reason. Second, on the voting, of course, this Ebola outbreak is in the eastern part, in North Kivu. And if we hit very hard and as aggressively as possible, we hope that it will be contained there. So it affects a small part of the country, and I don't think that will affect the vote, the election. And second, the election is in December, and we hope before then we will manage to arrest it. I'm being optimistic because if we really work hard and fight hard, and if we try more aggressively than the virus, which is a very aggressive virus, I know we can contain it as soon as possible, of course, despite the difficulties. The only thing I have is, and my call today, all our responses should really match the challenges that are actually posed in that particular region, including the security part or the security. So we need to have strategies that will address the security, the problems we're facing because of the security problem. The third question on the monoclonal antibody 114, of course, INRB is already treating, as we speak, 5 patients using that monoclonal antibody. It got clearance from the National Council or the National Ethical Committee. And I was informed, I have the information that they're doing well. And another information I would like to give you that they have started a study in partnership, INRB or Professor Muyembe's institution and NIH, National Institute of Health of the U.S., have started a study in May 2018 this year. So we hope to get more information from the two institutions in the future, and as soon as we have it, we will share it with you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Stephanie?
Yeah, my question originally was about the MAB-114, but you said you've got information that five patients are using it now and that they're doing well. How speedy of a rollout do you expect of that? And separately, could you tell us, since you've referred many times to the security situation, can you tell us exactly how MONUSCO is helping you with vehicles or other resources to reach some of these areas? There was reference to vehicles and other things in it recently.
Okay, thank you. On the medicine, not only the monoclonal antibody 114, MAB-114, but the other four molecules, since there is already clearance from the National Ethical Committee, we will use it as much as it needed. But on the use of the particular molecule, it will be the decision by the patient, I mean by the doctor or by the physician, and the patient's consent. So that will, of course, impact it. So on roll out, we would like to speed up as much as possible so we have as many beneficiaries as possible. On MONUSCO, we're very, very grateful that the support is really, really big. They already gave us 10 vehicles last week, as soon as we asked, and 30 more are in the pipeline. So they have already pledged a total 40, and we will get the 40 anytime, the additional 30, I mean. And not only that, they are supporting with AirBridge too, and that will be very important, the having a sustained AirBridge, because from the major hub, from Kinshasa, you have to fly to Goma, and then from Goma to Beni. And from Beni, of course, to Mangina and others, you have to drive, and they're covering the whole transportation required. Of course, we have added to that some of our own, too, but by and large, MONUSCO is taking that operation.
Thank you. Lisa?
Yes. Hi. Lisa Schlein, Voice of America. I have a couple of questions for you. The first has to do with the vaccination. I had heard that because of the conflict and the lack of access that you might not be able to have a ring vaccination as you had so successfully done in Equator province. Is this the case that you will not be able to do that, but you might have to just, I don't know, vaccinate people individually? You can explain how you would go about that. And would that be as effective as the ring vaccination? And then a second question has to do with the armed groups. You know that they can get sick and die from Ebola, but do they know this? And do you have any people, specific people, with whom you can negotiate? And I was wondering, since the International Committee of the Red Cross is also involved in this operation, I believe, whether you are working with that organization, which has a lot of experience in dealing in conflict areas and with armed groups, to help you try to get the message across to the various armed groups that there may be invisible bullets, but there are no invisible viruses, and they're going to die too.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. On the vaccination, so far we have selected the ring vaccination. We will proceed with that. But we will also consider, based on the situation and based on how the whole outbreak actually unfolds, we can take other measures. But for the time being, it's ring vaccination. On armed groups, as you rightly said, we're using organizations who have experience and know-how and skills to reach out to them. Because, as I said earlier, Ebola is dangerous to everybody there. And they have to have that information. And we're trying to use what you said. But in addition to that, communication through the radio, posters involving community leaders and also religious leaders, we hope will help the message to go across. And we hope that they will cooperate. And that's why also I called on, you know, to so that they give free access for this, for their own sake and for the sake of people, and also called for a cessation of hostilities that can give us time to control and manage this deadly virus.
Okay, thank you very much. We have a question from, or via Twitter, Periscope, from Helen Branswell of Stat News. And Dr. Tedros, she asks you, will the response teams be able to go back to check on the people who are vaccinated, to follow up to see if there are adverse events or infections in those who have been vaccinated? Or, given security issues, is it more likely that vaccination teams may only be able to make one trip to some areas?
Thank you, Helen, and thank you for asking the question virtually. First of all, on vaccination, we want to speed up and cover as many as possible because, as you know, there is the high population density that may actually contribute to high transmission of Ebola. So the speed with which we vaccinate will be very, very important. And that's why we're moving the people who have experience in vaccination from Guinea to be on the ground as soon as possible. And then after vaccination, we would like to do follow-ups too, because that's why also we're asking actually for free access, whether it's in the inaccessible area or in other stable areas. We would like to do it based on the protocol that we have.
Okay. Thank you very much. Are there any other questions from the room? No? Thank you. Then we thank all of you very much for coming. Lisa?
No, it's actually a follow-up on the question I asked you about the vaccinations. If you could be a little more fulsome, I mean, I did hear that would it be as effective if you are unable to have a ring vaccination and you have to vaccinate people individually? Do you think that this would be as effective or not?
When you say individually?
That is, with the ring vaccination, you have to find all of the contacts and vaccinate them as mm-hmm. follow-up. What I mean individually is that you may not be able to trace the contacts. They may miss out on the vaccinations, and only people that you can sort of find in communities who are vulnerable will be vaccinated. Will that be less effective than tracing all of the contacts?
By the way, that's why I said we will start with ring vaccination, but based on the data, and the situation, we may consider other methods too.
Like what?
For instance, one thing that is coming as a proposal from colleagues on the ground is in Mangina, there are already seven people who are seven health workers who are already confirmed positives. And this had contacts with many of the health professionals, and that's why we asked the health professionals as suspects to be home and replace them with others to take maximum precaution. And the recommendation that's coming is if the health professional, the number of health professionals confirmed positive is high, it may not be a bad idea to consider vaccinating the whole Mangina community, which is estimated at 1,200. But we have to check the figures if they're really 1,200. So that may give us quick, actually, containment. But we will consider that. This was proposed. It's because you're insisting that I actually told you. So nothing decided. It could be this. It could be other options. But one thing I will assure you is this is a very dangerous enemy, and we have to be vigilant, and we have to follow 24/7. And we need to be very flexible in changing the way we tackle the virus based on the situation. We have to be pragmatic, and that's what we're saying. So at all levels, including myself, we're focused on following up the situation, and the follow-up is 24/7, and we will do or decide the right thing based on the situation. I think that's the most important thing. It could be what you proposed, which we're trying to consider, but it could be something else, but we have to really make the right decision based on the new information we get on the ground, and the follow-up should be 24/7. Thank you.
You want? Yep, finished? So we were just saying thank you before this last question, and we will sign off now. Thank you to all. There will be an audio file of this press conference available, and we are putting together an edited video package also. Thank you all for coming. Thank you, Dr. Tedros.
Thank you. Thank you very much.